Hello. This is not my second podcast. It's 1B. I'm very excited about it. I came up with this idea that I can just do an episode based on not building on a joke and writing a joke and watching a joke fail and work, but one example of a crowd work situation where people are just animals. It's one of my favorite times because I'm also an animal. When chaos ensues, where someone says something or doesn't say something, or you're knocked out of whack a little bit. It's reminiscent to me of when I was a heckler at a Renaissance festival, where I'd have my head and my hands would be out of a wall, and people would pay money to throw tomatoes at my face, and I would have to make fun of them. And the better job I did, the more money they'd spend to throw tomatoes at me, and I got a percentage. So I wanted to be, you know, good at that. And then it turned out there was a gypsy named Boob that stole from everybody, but that's okay. I was like 17, but I like that feeling of chaos. But sometimes it can go south big time. And I think this is a perfect episode right now. That's why I'm so excited about this, because of all the horrors that are happening in the world. And I think that you can understand big picture things better if you understand yourself and in the minutiae of life, just the very basics of life. You know, I'm reading about people being divided and people being full of hate and resentful of each other, and it drives me a little crazy, but I'm also guilty of it. So this all takes place in a 10-minute set at the Hollywood Improv. I'm very excited to play you guys this and to show all the things that can come out of it. I'm doing a set. A dude in the front row has his foot on the stage. This starts to happen.
You know what I mean? It's like your foot's back on the stage. But that's all right. I've been learning about hipsters. When I moved to LA, see, I'm from a very small town in northern New York where, like, life is hard. You know, like, hard winters, people fight all the time, there's actual threats. And I moved to LA, and I met dudes like that, like hipsters. They're not bad people. They're just indoor cats. Like, he doesn't know that I'm a threat. Because in his world, there aren't threats. It's just avocados and threesomes, you know? There's fucking Whole Foods every three blocks. Like, he doesn't know that I'm an animal. Like, if the oil runs out, I take his family's resources. He's not tuned into that. And I don't hold it against him. Like, it's not bad. But he can just put his feet on another man's stage, another man that's double his size and has, you know, venom in his eyes. He's got his hat backwards, like, and we all know he's not a catcher. It's because he saw Bieber do it. If a man wears his hat backwards, he's playing catcher. He's a baseball player. That man is not a baseball player. He watches a lot of VH1.
All right, you see what's happening here. I made sure I played the whole thing so you can see that I went too far. I started getting laughs with the hipster house cat thing. And people had my back, and they're laughing because this guy, I told him to take his feet off the stage. He does, and he puts them right back on. And nothing drives me crazier than that, because it's just it's like peeing on someone's doorstep. It's such a territorial thing. And I took it a little far. You know, I made fun of him. I told him, you know, in a funny way, that life is a lot more primal than a lot of people realize it is. That all the things that that people think protect them are just, you know, figments of our imagination. That if there's ever a real problem, that's when you can see the animal come out in people. You know, if the oil runs out, I can take your resources because I'm larger than you. That type of stuff. It's kind of funny. I wasn't really trying to hurt his feelings at the time. But as that went on, he still wasn't taking his foot off the stage. That's why I went into his hat. The VH1 thing, kind of a dated reference. But I was getting a little angry. And it reminds me of a book I read recently, which I highly recommend people read, especially when it comes to police profiling and all the stuff that's happening. It's called Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. It doesn't seem like the type of thing that has anything to do with police, but it does. It's actually about marketing, this book. But it's about people making instantaneous judgments based on a trigger that they see. And usually that's based on past experiences, what you're taught, instincts, all these things come into play. And one thing I found incredible about the book was he analyzed what happens to people when their heart rates increase. And it broke down the scenario of a police officer in the 90s who shot and killed this unarmed man reaching for his wallet. And it just, on the surface, looks so cut and dry, murder. You know, it's murder. And it is, you know, it is. It is murder. It is horrible. But it, demonizing people, demonizing cops, demonizing all this stuff only pushes the problem. There's no solution in just demonizing. You can't just say, you bad, me good, you bad, me good. You have to start analyzing factors, all the factors, not just black, white. What are the rest of the factors? And one is heart rate. That what happens when someone feels fear and their heart rate increases, they tunnel vision. They only pick up on very specific things, things that are not actual threats, they start perceiving as threats. If your heart rate goes up over 140, it's called a state of arousal, not sexual arousal, but just arousal. And, you know, you see a rope, you think it's a snake, stuff like that. You get jumpy. I see it in comedy all the time. It takes years to be comfortable enough on stage to just deliver a joke, let alone handle someone coming at you. I see new comedians all the time react in fear, react in anger, react, say crazy shit. You know, Michael Richards, the guy from Seinfeld, who was dropping all those N-bombs and doing that racial tirade, comedians gave him more slack than other people because they knew what was happening. They knew he was just spiraling, that he wasn't necessarily proclaiming his racial opinion. He was trying to say the worst possible things he could. And of course, those are horrible things. Like, what he was saying was absolutely horrible. And he was just trying to shock his way out of the situation. So comedians were like, yeah, that's horrible what he did. He probably shouldn't go on stage anymore. But we kind of understood that it wasn't a declaration of racial intolerance. It was more just, that dude can't handle a stage. And police have the same problem. I personally think the major problem is not training cops at a state of fear. Because I read a book recently called The Gift of Fear by Gavin DeBecker, which was recommended in Amy Poehler's book, Yes, Please. She said she liked it. So, and I like Amy Poehler so much that I immediately read it. And what he does is teaches people, he's a security expert, specifically with women and protecting women and stuff, presidents, celebrities. And he tries to train bodyguards at a heightened state of fear so that they can react calmly when things are horrible. Genocides have happened. Wars have happened because people are scared. The Cold War witch hunts, the communist witch hunts, you know, people just speaking freely made them a communist. That was all fear. Why am I going on this ramble? Because this is at play here. I see this foot on the stage and now I see an act of war. And comedians are like dictators. We have to make an example. We have to execute, metaphorically, the rebels. Because we are in a tiny pocket. It's just you on a stage with a microphone, and there's hundreds of people around you that want to eat you alive. They don't necessarily think they want to eat you alive, but they do. It's chaos. You have to organize chaos. And if one person can get away with something, then anyone can. So you have to make an example. If someone's good to you, if someone laughs, you say, this is a great crowd. Thank you. You know, it's carrot and the stick. And the stick is necessary as well. But overreactions can occur. Here's the next interaction I have with this man in the crowd. This is about 3 minutes later.
Comfortable? Jesus. Fucking feet off the stage. Come on, man. You're a man. You're grown up. Take your foot off the stage. Look at me. Thank you. It's cool. He's a good kid. He just needs an older brother. A lot of times people forget I'm a human and I'm real close and I'm 6'7" and fucking fired up. This isn't a TV screen. Your foot was on my stage. Be scared. Be scared. No fear. Like, real fear. Actual fear.
Okay. Things are escalating. Still getting laughs because they like me. I'm doing well on stage, but you can hear those silences. Where I'm like, no fear, like no real fear. Get your foot off the stage. Like that's real. And they can sense it. And then they feel uncomfortable. So when I allow them to laugh with, he needs an older brother with a little empathy, they release tension with laughter. But that is a tense moment. That is not fun. this other book that I just finished applies as well. It's the biography of Albert Einstein by Walter Isaacson. Walter Isaacson is my favorite biographer. Unbelievable. He wrote the Steve Jobs bio, that really famous one. Ben Franklin's bio, all these great bios. And Einstein faced a lot of the same problems. That's why I like reading, you know, these biographies of these quote unquote great people, because you see how deeply flawed they are and how that is just a universal truth. You know, don't be too hard on yourself because everyone's flawed. You know, Einstein was a pacifist his whole life until World War II kicked in. He sees, you know, these threats. He didn't create the atom bomb, obviously. He did E equals MC squared, but he did originally write a letter to Roosevelt telling him, you know, we can make a bomb out of this. If you want to, let's do it, you know, because Germans might. Because when he was a pacifist, I don't think he saw what, like, the real evil that could come from an Adolf Hitler. Like, he didn't see, like, exterminations. Like, World War I is one of the dumbest losses of human life imaginable, but at least it wasn't. I mean, you have the Armenian genocide by the Turks, but that's not really that well known, and I don't think people, it's not in the world psyche as much. But when you see an Adolf Hitler, I mean, that is just, you're like, this man has to be stopped. He can't win, or else he will ruin everything in the world. And that's when he flip-flopped back to, you know, insisting on war and insisting on having the means to defeat this guy. So that kind of goes to show that there is no, like, peace or war. Everyone's capable of both. We're all dual. We all have a duality to us. And the true irony of Einstein is, by the end, he wanted universal peace. But the only way to do that is to create this ultimate state, this United Nations on steroids, this worldwide federation that could dismantle all the arms. I mean, I don't know if he ever saw the irony, but that is exactly the opposite of what he believed in, which was fighting systems, fighting that, you know, marching in the other direction, thinking in the other way, asking why, questioning everything. He wanted a force so large that they could make sure that no one exploded another atomic bomb. There was not another Holocaust. That all came from such a good place, but he didn't realize that that was the opposite of what he believed, and that putting that in reality would be impossible. He always said, God doesn't roll the dice. He was the dice. He was the radical element that shook things up and made people think and made people feel. He was the dice that God rolled. And I think he died without ever realizing that. And it doesn't matter how smart you are, sometimes you don't see what is happening. All right, back to comedy. This is what happened next. And this is my favorite part of the entire thing.
Are you okay? Well, are you sad? Like, are you sad at what I said? Or are you from Sweden? Because this happened to me once. One time, someone was this psychotic, like, just sitting there like a fucking moron. And it turned out it was a table of deaf people, but they sat up front. Are you from France? That's what it is, man. Why don't you fucking tell me that? There's a language barrier. Because I'm reading signals that aren't real. You know what I'm saying? It's all good, dude. It's totally fucking cool. Because, like, that's how wars start. Misinterpretation. This dude, you see how I fucking went at him? That's because I'm judging him as an American. Someone should quickly say he's fucking French. Because everything I said is wrong. Everything. Europeans, he could be a fucking vicious man. Like fighters over there wear capri pants. I'm judging him based on the thought that he's not French. But then after a while, he still was not fitting any mold at all, so I was like, you're fucking French, right? Or you're not from here. All right, so I'm glad. Bonjour. Merci, comme ça. That means kind of. Pomme de terre. They're pomme de terre. Potatoes. Here we go, man. Green beans. Pomme de mousse. Pomme de mousse. Je voudrais pomme de mousse. Everything I want, grapefruit.
All right. That's how wars start, an act of war. This is all just silly comedy. I'm a clown. But you can see so much of the world in that, you know? And you can see the turn. All the things that I interpreted as aggressive were just him not knowing what I was saying. He literally couldn't speak English. And he was reserved and probably was scared. And a lot of times scared people display the same signs of aggressive people. And I felt bad. I immediately felt like apologizing and giving him a hug. And the only way I could culturally apologize is show that I knew 8 French words. Like 8. Here's another Einstein quote that I wrote down from the book because I thought it was amazing. America can be swept by waves of dangerous passions, but our passing sentiments that are absorbed by its democracy and righted by its constitutional gyroscope. Everything, even lunacy, is mass-produced here and goes out of fashion. I love that. Basically, America is capable of just ridiculous anger, and then it just kind of goes away. A lot of countries don't have that. We're fortunate to have that in America, where it's like, rah, 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 rah. Oh, here's something else. Oh, we're good. And you could kind of see that in me there. I was kind of representing America in a way where it's like, I was threatening him and his family that I would kill and eat their resources if the oil ran out. That's a huge overreaction. And then when I realized that I was wrong, quickly admitted it, had a big laugh about it, and then moved on. But that isn't the end of it. There's 2 more things that make this story so goddamn funny to me. Check this next thing out.
You want a little of this? A little Vienna, not too far. A little fucking Moscow. Who's fucking culture now, bitch? Who's become American? Who's become American? By the way, Europeans always make us seem stupid. They're like, oh, you only know one language. It's like, yeah, because we plan properly. Fucking 3,000 miles, one language. Maryland doesn't have their own fucking language because we're not morons. They don't go 60 miles to have to speak a new fucking language. They're the ones who are wrong. Alright, it's true. Why don't you have to speak German? Because Pennsylvania isn't a different language because we're not stupid. Alright. But you guys agreed on the Euro, agree on a fucking language. Alright. Wanna talk about some mistakes you guys made in World War I and World War II? Wanna talk about some serious mistakes? Verdun? Ever heard of it? No, Verdun? Alright, anyway.
Alright. I start playing classical music to show that I'm cultured. And I don't know if you guys realize, but he doesn't say a word the whole time. What you now are seeing is my own insecurities coming out. Purging from my own body. What the hell am I talking about? Like, I start ranting about Verdun. That's a World War I battle that's really bad. And at this point, I'm saying, look, I can play this. Look, I can play this. And then in my mind, I'm already saying what he's thinking, that I'm stupid. My insecurities now are continuing this war. I'm now saying, oh, well, we only speak one language because we don't need more languages because we all speak English, which is more efficient. You guys are wrong. Every state in America doesn't have a new language. After that show, I do realize that that is a funny premise, and I will do that in the future, but I have to make it, you know, funny. The first one got a big, big laugh. I don't recall now what I just said, but because we plan better or I don't know, something like that. But I think that's pretty funny that I just start seeing things that aren't there. Back to Einstein. All matter, everything is just a field theory. Like when you knock on wood, that wood represents the space that all the electrons could possibly be in. It's 99.9 times 1,000,000,000% empty. It's all empty space. But that is the probability that something could be there, and our brain just warps it into these solid objects that aren't there. It's all empty. But we see these like tiny little things and then perceive matter. And you can see that there. You can see that in this cultural battle where I pick up on these tiny little things that probably aren't even there and I react to them. Oh, you think I'm stupid? Well, watch me play Mozart. He never said I was stupid. I called myself stupid because I'm an idiot. And here's the last little piece to this saga. And this is like the next night. This is what I say on stage the next night. Different crowd.
I just got an argument with a European. Europeans get really pissed around Thanksgiving. They don't have it. Canada kind of just took it. But Europeans always make us feel dumb. They're like, how many languages do you speak? I'm like, one. Very stupid. I speak one because I only have to speak one. There's no Maryland language because we're not fucking morons. When we set up the country, every state spoke one language. We all picked a team, and now it's great. So go fuck yourself. Sorry that when we drive 60 miles, we don't have to learn a new language because you're idiots. German? No, I'm in France. It's like, no, now I'm in Pennsylvania. It's the same shit. We're smart.
All right, shaping into a decent bit. I might have to dial it down a little. Not say idiots and use, you know, inflammatory speech. But the funny part, obviously, is that I said I got in an argument with a European recently. I just showed you every single interaction I had with that guy. Was that an argument? He said, yeah, yeah, was the only word he said to me the entire time. That argument was in my own head. That argument didn't exist. And then I said that they get touchy around Thanksgiving because they don't have it. What the hell am I talking about? Like that we're so much better because we have a Thanksgiving and they don't. And that's probably why he was being such a dickhead. He was literally just sitting there. This is only my second podcast episode, and this is actually not even an episode. This is just a crowd work one. And I'm already seeing so many things about myself that I can help understand and learn. Like, if I didn't record all these things and then later analyze them and then show you what I'm thinking about, I may have just not even thought about that. Just thought in my head that there was this French guy that told me I was stupid. Like, that's crazy. And we all do that. You know? We all do that. We get trained in our head to think that someone's against us or someone thinks something about us or someone has this stereotype or this is just true about these people. And it's not backed up by your own experience. Okay, young black males. Let's take them. I've been mugged a few times in my life. I've been beat up. I've been punched in the face by completely random people. I have been, someone stole my bike. Not zero times was it a black guy. It was always white people because I lived in a town that was predominantly white. And every time I was just violently attacked, it was by a white person. So in my head, white people should be more violent than black people. But that's not what it is in my head. In my head, young black males are scary. I see a young black male, I'm like, oh man, that guy could beat my ass. They've never done it to me. I'm 34 years old. I've never been randomly ass kicked by a black man ever. So why do I think that? Because that's what is told to me over and over and over. And it's the repetition of it until your reaction isn't set in reality at all. It's just instinct that has been drilled into your head from an outside force. Don't you see how much that happens all the time? It's just, this is what it is. This is what it is. And then you're like, oh, this is what they think. I think French people think we're stupid. Granted, some of them do. I have had some snide remarks. And for those of you that cite statistics, oh, young black men are the most violent, commit the most violent acts in America. That may actually be true. That's probably true. But it's typically against each other. Black on black crime versus black on white crime, that became a thing. where are you getting that statistic? Is that based on convictions? Is that based on arrests? How close to the actual event can you get? Is it, if it's convictions, that doesn't mean anything. Because a lot of white people can afford better lawyers. And the same crime can happen and a black person will get a harsher sentence. And then that goes in the statistics book as another violent crime. A white kid with, you know, a rich dad could beat the shit out of someone and it gets knocked down to a misdemeanor. And now that act never happened. That's not in the stats. Now, in reality, yeah, black people probably do commit more violent acts in America. Why? Because there is no good and evil. There's hungry and there's full. Desperate people do desperate shit. Because it's not black people, it's poor people. And here's the difference between black and white. There's a ton of poor white people. Tons. Insane amounts. One of the problems with Ferguson and with all these things, with cops and black people, white cops, black people, that's what the media keeps drilling into our heads. What Einstein has taught me, Joseph Campbell, Malcolm Gladwell, all these people in these books that I read this week, that's why they're all in my head, is that you have to multiple categorize. You have to always see things not for one category. There's field theory. What else is it? Is it a white man and a black man? Or is it a cop and a black teen? Let's go a little deeper. It's a cop and a poor person, a poor male, with ambition. Okay, now we're starting to increase our categories. We have a police officer, which represents the system, safety in the city. And then we have a threat to safety, which is someone who just wants more than they have. Hungry, right? Black, poor black people typically live in urban environments. After slavery, I'm guessing the last thing they want to see is farm equipment. So they hit cities, they got industrial jobs, they stayed there. A lot of poor black people live in cities. Not a lot of poor black people in the country. There's some in the South, not a lot. Detroit, New York, Sacramento, LA, you know, a lot of these cities, you go to a urban area, it's black, right? Where are poor white people in the country? Doesn't have the same population density, does it? Want to know what else it doesn't have? The same resources. Okay, the cops are basically the security guards for the government. They want to keep law and order. They want to keep you safe. Why? Because they want to keep their shit. The banks are in the cities, guys. Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Chase, you know, the museums, skyscrapers, corporations, infrastructure. It's all in the cities. That's where all the money is. Okay, so who's a threat to that? Poor people. Who is poor where there is shit? Black people. Who is responsible for keeping order? Cops. Okay? The country, no one gives a shit if Gary explodes his trailer fucking his sister cooking meth. That's what poor white people do. They cook meth, they bang their relatives, and they set fires. Okay? Wells Fargo isn't there. It's not in the country. Cops don't patrol trailer parks. A lot of my black friends would be like, oh, response time for a crime because in a black neighborhood is this versus white neighborhood with is this. No, you're thinking rich white neighborhood. You go out in the country, response time is horrific. Your trailer's on fire. You call the cops. You're looking at an hour. I know this. My hometown has a lot of trailer parks. A lot of places I've been at have a lot of trailer parks. Cops don't give a shit about those people. They don't patrol there. Some white moron gets hammered, beats the fuck out of his wife. He doesn't go to jail. Cops contain it. They say, shut up, stop, just don't call us. Okay? The city has all the money. Rich people live in the city. They have to make sure that the hungry stay away from shit they can eat. Now, does that mean that police aren't racist? Does that mean the country isn't racist? Of course not. Because people don't think critically. People don't take a step aside and think. I'm fucking racist. Everyone's racist because it's been drilled in our heads. Even if you don't want to be, you still are. You got to read Malcolm Gladwell's Blank. The dude, he's half black, and he does this exercise. I think it was from Harvard or one of these big colleges where they tell you an emotion or a scenario or something, and you have to say if it's a black person or a white person. And they break it down to, like, very obviously good and bad things. And you just immediately think black, even if you know it's not. And it horrifies you. I mean, my parents are college professors. I was raised in a house with very little ignorant hate. It's like, I could have had a gay brother and it would have been fine. Anything's fine. There's no isms in my house, but it's still there. You know, you think pilot. Immediately you think man. You don't think woman. Man, white. Gun, you know, you just, these things occur. And I never thought I was racist. I always stood on my soapbox and was like, I'm not affected by that. I don't think that way. And that book recently, very, very recently, I was like, wow, I did just think black guy with getting mugged. And I've never been mugged by a black guy. What the hell is that? And Gladwell went on to explain that that's almost everyone in the country falls into that category. That if given enough time, you can analyze it and you can think, oh, that isn't real. That's just in my head. Bad driver. Boom. Asian. You know, is that real? I don't know. Probably not. But you just think it. War general. Man. You immediately think man. You don't think, could it be a woman? You just think man. CEO. White or black? White. Immediate. Could be black. You don't fucking know. And he found that time is the only factor with response. That if you're given, you know, like 0.7 seconds versus 0.3 seconds, you will adequately say, you know, that you don't know, that you have no idea. It could be any race. It could be any gender. But when you have to function on that quick, now that reptilian brain, that animal brain that categorizes to survive. That's what a lot of people also forget, is that these things kept you alive for 99% of your existence. You see something in the grass, you think snake. If it's a rope, that's fine. But if it's a snake, that quick movement kept you alive. And that is what kept us alive and was now our biggest problem. A lot of the things that kept us alive is now killing us spiritually in this country. And we have a way out. It's just time. Think. And also be healthy. Drink water. Eat right. Sleep. Care. Love. Like, the action of loving someone or being in love or allowing someone to love you helps make these things kind of die down and the volume turn down. And that's pretty much my point, I guess, is that you put these great people on a pedestal like Albert Einstein, and you realize he died broken. Not broken. I'm sure he was happy and proud of his kids, and, you know, he loved his wife. But just trying to prove something that he held on to. Maybe in those final minutes, that comforted him. That it was like those dogs that have to wear a backpack, or like a donkey that has to walk. Like, work is his peace. Maybe. I hope so. Because if he really was confused, the greatest mind of the 20th century, if he died just confused and scribbling, maybe that's the point of all of it, that we will never know anything. And that in that is the happiness. I don't know. I'm getting a little too intense. But this has been really fun. That little interaction with that French guy spawned all this thought. And I wouldn't have had that if it wasn't for this really new podcast. I always just read and just things that sit in my brain, and I never actively went through everything. You know, I've consumed thousands of books in my life that I never actually took the time to apply it to my life. So this is fun. And I hope people can enjoy this for whatever reason. It's the underbelly of comedy. Why didn't they laugh? Mistakes I make on stage. and I'm glad to share it with you guys. Cool. Have a great new year, and high-five each other, hydrate, hug deeply. Don't watch the news because they want to scare the fuck out of you to sell you shit. Ebola's not coming. And really think about who's beating the shit out of you, whether they are, in fact, of the race that you think they are. And then think about the cops who live in fear, who get murdered, who have to protect these giant structures, and empathize with them too. Because it's not literally and figuratively as black and white as people think. And if you are just out there trying to prove your point and you're posting it on social media, you're not doing anyone a service. I had a friend, not a close friend, but a guy I knew, a white kid, got shot. He was unarmed by the cops because they thought he was a fleeing suspect, but he was a fleeing victim. No one ever talked about it in the news. Al Sharpton never brought it up because it didn't polarize people. And I used to be bitter about that, but I'm not, because it doesn't affect me. I can ride my bike today. You know, I can drink water, and I can write, and I can express myself, which I just did. And that's it. All right, I'm rambling. All right, much love. If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger. I've been friends with her for 10 years. One of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here, and it's funny. And I love you.